the round pebble grown within the triangle of a living set of tree roots. And so keeping that in mind, now we have had the vision of visions. And I'm going to share that with you. Because Doris will tell you, I don't have visions. And I don't die and come back. She has both. Both. But this is how far removed your individual consciousness allows you to get yourself into some comfort zone. So that when you don't feel good, finally, I know what it is. I'm going on 67 years old. I'm no longer 25. It's all right if I don't breathe so good. And then responsibility kicks in. What are you going to do with all that that God gave you? Well, I'm not going to talk about it because it upsets people. Oh, yes, we're going to talk about it. That's what you've come here to do. That's what you wanted to hear from Little Crow, and you're going to hear it from me. And I don't care if it takes until Wednesday. The ones that have to go can listen to it on tape. I'm going to tell you about you. And that first vision. She says, my God in heaven, EJ, I don't even know what this is about. I can't even talk about it. It is so big. But I look, I was shown, I was there, but I wasn't, but I saw. And as far as I could see, there were fields plowed, planted, plants had grown up, and they were barren, they were dead. They got no water. Everything was like it had been cooked. And I saw everything falling down. I saw death everywhere. And I can't handle it. Well, what would you like to do? I said, well, I can't go home yet. Well, what would you like to do? I said, I need to go talk to Carl Bryant. Okay. As soon as we get into Santa Barbara, I'll try to find him. And we can go down there. It's quite a ways from where each lived to the other. EJ found a phone. Little Crow answered it, and he was waiting for the call. And he said, what does she want to do? Well, she wants to come talk to you. Then get down here. I'll meet you there. And from that distance, they pulled into the driveway at the same time. And they went into Little Crow's place where he has his sacred altar. And he said, just start talking. I want to hear. And she goes through all this and she says, now, you stop me because I think this is crazy. You just stop me when it's not true. And he didn't stop her, so every now and then she would stop. Stop me! And she says, and I've got these sticks out there for you. And he said, well, I would like to have them. And so she's a little bit angry about it. And she goes into the coach and she brings out this little symbol. And, of course, Little Crow's very touched by that and the tears flow. And he takes it and puts it over by his sacred buffalo head. The most sacred place in the room. He said, now finish your story. I don't have a finish. I know that we're supposed to do something, but I don't know what to do. He said, it'll come clear what you need to do. Now, this was before the writing of Sipapu. This is where the bonding began to take form. This is where a white eagle, head of the council, began to recognize the importance of some of the connections being made. And then coming one day before they moved, once again, they were, in the fact, moving things. They come from L.A. area over Angeles Crest into Antelope Valley. And Dharma is stunned. Because you don't understand a vision versus a daydream. Or reality versus whatever you've conjured. Oh, well, I pretended that there was water up to here. No. A vision is when you look out there and there is water. And only small hillocks rising above that massive sea of water that washed all the way up across Lancaster, Palmdale, Mojave, ocean. And so the mind says, oh, turn this off. Get the faucet turned off right now. I just cannot handle this. This is not my problem. At the time the first of the vision came, they were in Palmdale, just entering Palmdale. And you see, they were in the wind energy business. And right above Palmdale, actually almost directly on the fault, they were contemplating putting up a bunch of wind machines. Well, that's fine. They're going to fall down and into that sea. But you go right ahead and put them up there if you want to, sweetheart. Well, we can't let Westinghouse, they were working with Westinghouse. Never mind what their enemies are going to tell you. These two were interesting people then. And they were working with Westinghouse, later with Westinghouse Mitsubishi. Bishi. I'm not Japanese. But I'm closer to Japanese than I am to American. And I note that Little Crow didn't let you off on that one either. If I am the eldest son, and I am this color, guess what my parents look like? Well, you see, they don't look like that either. Because the parents are light. And this is something that the white man has grabbed for himself. Since light is basically the only descriptive term you can use is white, because if you have a rainbow, you have colors. So I claim whiteness. Well, you don't get anything. You've just claimed something, but you're not white. Look at yourself. And black people are not black. Red men are not red. Hopefully, all of you would spill red blood, and if it was all out here on this table, you would not be able to tell the difference, would you? There would be. Somebody had the nerve to bleed on the table. So you're going to learn, and you're going to grow up through this bigotry. Are there differences in ethnicity? Of course. Are there differences in features? Of course. Because there are many races. Are there differences in actual composition of a human being? Absolutely. You will find that only Jewish lineage has Tay-Sachs disease, or predominantly so. And some of these other birth problems, genetic problems. It's the dark races only that have sickle cell anemias. It is a genetic makeup, just as a gene determines the color of your epidermis. So you cannot be better or worse than anyone else because you didn't choose what you are. Your parents may have. And it may get to the point where you can legitimately clone someone. That's a choice. But that didn't happen to any one of you. So let's not be blaming that. These are behaviors that are taught. Now things are going to get serious. And I'm going to have to talk about these serious things because the first decade now is past. in my actively soliciting attention from this translator. That is what that first harmonic convergence was about. I had to have a speaker. I had to have someone that would do this job. And obviously, I was not getting it done where I was. So I asked my receiver. And most of you have heard of her or know her. Sister Thedra and Tuwita. I brought Tuwita all the way from Indiana. And she didn't know what in the world do I have to go out there for. I don't know those people because I need a speaker until I can get my speaker. Well, Dorma didn't want to speak. And what is this meeting? You see, in the winter, she was given a job to do. And this was mostly pushed by Little Crow. They were going to make some cute Indian movie or something. And it got so important, and nobody knew what to do with these bits and pieces of script and writings. And I'm sure that EJ can probably recall the day sitting in the living room. Little Crow said to her, "When are you going to get busy and do your job?" What in the world are you talking about? My what job? But I don't understand. I mean, there's Jerry Popper and there's Silva Chacho, who went to Peru many times with Shirley MacLaine. Oh, we have entree to some really interesting people. Don't go away, guys. We know them all the way from Shirley MacLaine up through John Majors. Right on through to Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller. You just don't remember it. Anyway, Dorley says, "Well, I don't know, we're trying to move and Chacho thinks he can do this movie treatment and Jerry Popper can just whip it out and nobody does a blame fool thing." And so Big Mouse says, "I don't understand this. If I had that job to do, I'd certainly be at it." And Little Crow says, "Get in front of that mirror and repeat what you just said." So she did, and she said, "Not me, no sir, no way." And she was told that she would have until the end of January. January 31st, it will be out of your typewriter. "Not mine." "Oh, yeah, I think so." So the weeks go by, and Chacho's going to come, and he's going to stay with them. Well, Chacho never has a job, and he usually travels with 15-year-old girls, and it's just really not such an ideal sort of arrangement. But he had done a pretty good job with Date with the Gods, and it was a lovely friendship. And so he's going to come and do it. Oh, no. This will mean a party from the beginning of December to the end of January, and nothing will be done. Oh. Okay. That won't work. So 2 weeks before the end of January, Little Crow calls, and they think this is kind of nice. He asks them out to dinner. And they kind of suspicion that maybe his dinner invitation wasn't just forthright that everybody wants to eat. So they meet him, and he takes them to dinner. And he immediately, after ordering, says, "When are you going to get busy typing? Did you bring me down here to feed me while you tell me that?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am." And so, as they got very near the end of dinner, Alice says, "Would you want to come over for a cup of coffee?" And while she's shaking her head, "Yes, I would really like to come over for a cup of coffee and clear this up," Little Crow is saying, "Nope, you go home and get started." Well, I thought you were going to do it. I will do what I'm supposed to do. You do what you're supposed to do. And you only have until the 31st of January. So all the way home, mumble, mumble, grumble. And the next day, well, where do you start? Well, you get a piece of paper. Well, boy, I'll tell you, no matter what a movie treatment is, I'm not going to get very far with this steno pad. And so finally, the light dawns, and she does what finally you all come to do. God, I know you've given me a mission that I can't really get out of. But, sir, if you want a story written, you got to get started. And so we started. And we wrote the end. Then we wrote part of the beginning. And then we would write out of the middle. And Little Crow, likewise, was doing his chapter. And you would have thought at the end, on the 31st day of January, the last pages came out in rough form, but they had been edited enough to be able to be passed around to people who really needed them. And then it had begun. That manuscript got copied all over the world. One of the most remarkable days, still these people trying to move. And this story is not meaning anything to her. Very little to EJ. This is a nice little story, but now, as per promise, you just put down what you want and we will structure it because there'll be plenty of people who know what to do with it. Nobody knew what to do with it. Because Sister Thedra had been named in the book, she got the book, the manuscript. We had to ask her permission to use her name. She sent it to Tuita, who immediately called and said, "My commander has asked that I come to the gathering." What gathering? What are you talking? Well, you know, the harmonic convergence. The harmonic conversion to what? So after they're off the phone, onto the phone. "Carl, what in the world is a conversion?" And he started to laugh because that was obviously 1987. And he said, "Well, it's when you will find the ancient Indian original calendars end and we start." "Well, but people say they're going to come out to Tehachapi on that day to experience something." "Well, that's interesting. They probably will," he said. He very, very deliberately does not play into her sympathetic parts. "That's fine. I think they should do that." So these people finally get moved out here, and within just weeks looms this, by now they've heard from 35 people. As a matter of fact, in their house where they were before, the telephone cord usually ran from its source across the hallway, and with all these little feet, the attachment cord had been ripped out so many times that you end up with a quarter of an inch of wire, you know. So this particular day, EJ and Doris are sitting in the middle of the hall with these little wires, and the doorbell rings. Now, their son Chuck had just been there. He had gone out the back door. Her first, you know, irritation was, "Now, why didn't he come back in the back door? Why is he ringing the front door?" So we've got to answer it. So she gets up, though, because it was locked, and she opens the door, and there stands a man as big as the side of a mountain. It was Eric Peterson. And he's got something in his hand, and he's flapping it at her. And he said, "Are you the one that wrote this?" "Well, I don't know what you have." "Sepapu." "Oh, well, yeah, I guess. I typed it. I wrote it. I have to talk to you." And so he comes in, and they talk. And she assures him that, no, that's not really all that special. And he said, but I don't think you understand that it is that special. And then he said, and Sai Baba has made something, or I have something from Sai Baba in the car that's for you. Oh, Sai Baba. BJ, there's just something really crazy going on here. Who would be Sai Baba? So he goes out, Eric goes out to the car, and he rushes back in, and he's got a little medicine bottle half full of ashes. Of what? Well, this is Vibhuti. He kind of just rolls over that. And Baba makes this. He creates this. Well, fine. I. What do you do with it? Well, it's very honorable. It's wonderful. And some people just put a dot on their forehead. Others tip it to their tongue. But this is specifically for you. I feel sent to bring this to you. Well, they became very, very close friends through that relationship. And obviously, Audrey and Eric now live out here. And Eric is still as devoted to Baba as he ever was. We went through many, many exchanges of Satya Sai Baba, Sri Satya, and Babaji. You see, Babaji is the higher essence or being of any Baba, including Satya Sai Baba. There are two entities in one being. So yes, indeed, it is an important message. Well, after Eric left, the telephone really got some use. First, a little crow. What in the world? And who is Satya Sai Baba? And I got these ashes. And by now, she had them smeared all over her head, and she'd been eating it. I mean, if a little does a lot of good, I mean, a lot is really. So, then she calls Sister Thedra. What do you know about this? And so she says, well, he is considered to be an avatar. Oh, my God. EJ, what is an avatar? I don't know. And so you're feeling really dumb. And Sister, what's an avatar? Well, it is considered sort of the return of, or the expression of, returned God. You mean as in the Messiah, or the second coming, or the, well, and then she goes on with the Indian type of explanation about the Far East masters and so forth, which is interesting, but way over the head. Well, I have this something. It starts with a V, but I don't know what it is. And a man by the name of Eric Peterson that I never met in my life had tracked us down because of this manuscript. And she said, yes, and we need to talk about that manuscript. And I said, well, let's talk about these ashes first. What do you do with them? I have them on my head, and I've been eating a little. And she says, I have some too, and I think maybe I should join you. So it was really kind of funny, you know. Everybody smeared up with ashes, and as if that is going to do something. Don't you see, people? As if that is going to do something. If you do these things without thought and consciousness, all you've done is smear ashes on your head, and you might as well get them out of your fireplace. It's going to be cheaper in the long run. Or once you learn that you can cleanse everything with sage, use sage ashes. Boy, that's really good. And if you are lucky enough to get sweetgrass and juniper to the right stage of drying, where it's still moist enough to make wonderful smoke. If you burn sweetgrass, Grandfather Tonkonsula will hear me. He likes sweetgrass. That is the way when an Indian burns sweet grass, it is, God, Father, hear me. Only we call this one Tonkonsula, grandfather. And if I do it this way, he will hear me because my heart is traveling with this smoke and it's pleasing. Sage is nasty. We don't like sage. And we don't like cigarettes. Poor Al Overholt, when he moved out here, he was a chain smoker. And how in the world was he ever going to break this habit? Energies do not like tobacco smoke. Now, you can burn sweet tobacco in your ritual pipe, and it's okay. But literally, to come into the presence of this kind of toxic smoke, you will find most of the energy forms do not like it. And you will note that Al Overholt no longer smokes. This is making a choice to get control of yourself in order to achieve what must be achieved. And I know that in the beginning it had to have been a riot and irritation beyond irritation. I would make these people sit for 20 minutes in a warm bathtub trying to clean up the energy so that we could get on with our work. So there has been as much laughter and humor and comedy as you will ever find anywhere in this world within this story. And all the while that this is going on, even before they get out here, all of these channels become, I don't know, it was like stirring up the cement mixer. They were just pouring out the end. I am not a channel, she would say. I'm not any of those things. I am certainly not psychic. I don't know from anything. Somebody gave her a psychic little quiz one day. She flunked everything. And they threw up their hands and said, oh, well, you're trying too hard. And all the while, Little Crow walked right along behind her, and when she would put her work down, he would kick her in the fanny, literally. Get on with it. Well, I don't even think I like you. Well, and then he'd mumble Pleiades, and he'd do all this stuff, and where in the world is that? Well, it's a little star cluster, so don't worry yourself about it. That's where we come from, to this place at this time. Well, the next thing you know is Sister Thedra is on the phone saying, Sananda has told me that I'm not to have a gathering at this time. Now, this is harmonic convergence that the world has waited for all of these eons of time in your calendar counting. And everyone who knew Sister Thedra was expecting the annual gathering of the Children of Light on Shasta Mountain. And this little lady says, I am told that I am to bring, and she named off some people, and to be at your place during this time. Oh, my goodness. We don't know what it is. What makes you? It's right here in your story. Right here in your story. And I am told to be there. And David and Tuita will come from Indiana. And she named off some other people. Oh, well, my goodness. And so the next few weeks are spent cooking and trying to organize and stash stuff enough to have guests. And surely enough, we never averaged less than 40 at any given meal. And I think, you know, she sat finally and the fire came over the mountain. This has been deja vu, my friends. Right to the temperature changes. Right to the day of the temperature changes in this valley. Fire for fire. One ridge over. Both years. And it was like, she said something at one point, it's like Jesus in those fish. Every time it was time to eat, it looked like this. But this was something they had done before anyone came. But it almost materialized. Well, it's because we had other things to do than cook. And when that day came, the government came through in beautiful form. We sent three craft, and we landed them. One out at Yucca Flats, one down in Texas, and the other in Virginia. The one in Yucca Flats got the most attention because it was the closest, and it was the only one they knew about. And there were five beings aboard. Three were dead, a couple were living, and nobody could get in the craft. And it was beginning to make news. So Dorma, once again, not having the vaguest idea about what was going on, and at this point, Eric was the brains in the group, he said, she says, we are going to go over there and get our people. And Eric said, we're not going to do anything of the sort. We're going to send whatever energy we have into this moment. But running over there is not going to help anything. Now they're all up on the hill trying to decide what in the world we're going to do when there's nothing to do. But there would later come to be confirmation of all of this. So when they finally come down off the hill, they're not in the house more than a moment, maybe 30 seconds. And the phone rings. And it's Little Crow. I just thought I would check in on you. Well, they have taken our people and they've, you know, crashed our plane. Yeah, they've done all this stuff. And he said, yes, I know. And what big deal do you think you're going to do about it? And I said, well, according to Eric, we're not going to do anything. Because I would just go get them. And he said, honey, you can't go get them. And he said, there are another couple of them down. You'll be hearing about it. And I just thought I should check with you to make sure that all of you are okay. So these wonderful things happened. This was on the 18th that happened. And later, it was reported that a craft had crashed and they had taken it. When they finally got it loaded, they couldn't get into it. But they took it to McFarland Air Force Base, which is a defunct base in Texas. But this did get reported in the Houston papers and on KPRC and KTRH, which are radio stations in that area. Now, I'm telling you this because I'm reminding her she doesn't know most of this. I mean, how many of you know what radio stations are predominant in Houston, Texas? And then in Virginia, very little was ever said about that one. That was just hushed up and the craft taken to Langley. But the one out here was really funny. 1987, July 18th. I'm sorry, August. They took, finally, when they got inside the craft, which happens almost instantly the moment we decide to let them in. They haul all of them out, and oh my God, two of them are alive. Not coherent, but alive. And then for several hours there was no life. So they're dead, right? Well, they take them over, these bodies, over to Edwards Air Force Base. What in the world are we going to do with these aliens? And finally ship them off to Nellis Field, whereby the two alive every now and then would twitch and move and throw them all into an absolute panic. And we enjoyed that because we were watching this while the ones who were the energy forms of those beings were doing it with their little keyboard. And then came the interesting things. Your confirmation comes in strange ways. Word came that something had happened out at Edwards, and it got even funnier because after a while you get to meet someone who was there, see. And there meant that when they hauled these live beings in there, one of those young soldiers said, "Ma'am, alive? When the old man sees this, he's going to shit his pants. What in the hell are we going to do with these?" And they're still over at Nellis.
I met a soldier who'd been in one of those places where they'd taken a crash victim. I met him in 1980. They'd taken him off in a dark bus and some obscure base.
Oh, yes.
And then contacted UFO interested people afterwards.
It is. It's.
Can you repeat that?
She is saying that in the 80s, there was someone who was an eyewitness to this, this type of thing where energies were pulled out of craft and literally experienced them, saw them. But most of what you see out of Area 51, Norio was going to try to be here. Even as early as this afternoon, perhaps he can make it. But I think that there is enough about Area 51 that you've experienced lately as the government begins to allow you... Well, why do they have to change their stories? That's what it amounts to. They lie to you, then they lie to you, and then they have to change their lies periodically. And you have U-2 spy planes that are obviously the same thing as a floating craft over the edge of town.
But the lights over Phoenix.
Yes, that sort of thing. Flares. Obviously, if each flare weighs the same thing and it is dropped, although you never know what it's dropped from, did they shoot them up and they suddenly came on all at once into synchronized dancing lights? What are we talking about? Well, a lot of these things are nothing more than government stuff. Out here, that same series of lights has been seen by umpteen of you in this room. Silent flying, almost a hovercraft, can go extremely quickly across the sky or very slowly. And then there are our craft that are all around most of the time, whether or not you can see them. But obviously evening is a better time to look at lights. And that's worth another week of sharing. What I want to get across without taking up all of the day is that there has been a long period of time that seems like the blink of an eye that has given all of you an opportunity for an education of a higher type of knowing and knowledge about so many varied things that if you had taken advantage of it, you are the most informed people on the globe. We've tried to cover everything that we could and still leave our people alive enough to function, because life is what happens while you're trying to do these other things, and it doesn't go away, And it isn't all right not to be gracious. And it isn't all right to do this or to do that. And you mustn't do this or do that. And all the while, your enemies are going to have you in a court of law. For what? You came here to write. I didn't know, you will be told. These other people, what are they doing to me? I sit in a basement at a computer keyboard, she says, and what is this? What is this cult crap? That's what happens. Anytime you have a Khazarian happening, they're going to blame you with being anti-Semitic, aren't they? If there is an opportunity to make hay in governmental shenanigans with the black community, you're going to be racist, aren't you? White eyes haven't been so damn wonderful to these people. But I'll tell you, Boko of the Black Panthers has. Little Crow and Standing Bear have been. When you want to talk minority, you are getting to be the minority. In every way that you want to add that one up. And you just don't even seem to note it's happened. And certainly the black and the Indian cannot comprehend that they have a bigger majority than you have. You've looked at the color of skin until you've lost the adversary, because the adversary comes in every color.